from WBUR Boston. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Flights of fast food workers across the country are walking off their jobs already in New York, Chicago, St. Louis, Detroit, Milwaukee, Seattle, and more, saying minimum wage just won't cut it. They want $15 an hour and room to unionize without retaliation. The pushback goes like this: that's too much to ask for. Do you want fries with that? Well, is it? What's fair? What's workable? What's decent? This hour on Point, the low-wage fast food economy and workers saying they can't take it. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. What's right here? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We will hear in a moment from a couple of fast food workers who have walked off the job in Chicago and Kansas City, one a senior citizen, the other homeless. Here's some sound from fast food workers who have walked off. This was in New York, Union Square, Monday. Employees from McDonald's, Burger King, KFC, Wendy's, protesting minimum wages. We can't survive on $7.25, they're saying. That among those workers in Lower Manhattan, here was Chanel Young, told NPR she earns the minimum wage, and
it's horrible. It's horrible. Everything goes up. You can't. It's unfair. You can't find an apartment. You can't pay for children's school uniforms. Everything is unfair. We can't live off of it.
It's horrible. It's unfair, she says. Here's an interview from Chris Hayes, MSNBC. This was Kareem Starks. Works at McDonald's in Brooklyn. Says he's had to work harder every day lately for less money at the fast food chain.
What's going on is they just cutting back. Like, they cut back on hours. They cut back on employees. And, you know, great employees like myself have to work twice as hard. Like, I might be forced to do drive-thru one and two, or I might be forced to make burgers and, you know, do the grill. And at the same time, it's not fair. It's not fair that I have to work twice as hard and I only make $7.25.
It's not fair. You try it. Let's go first to Steve Greenhouse. Stephen Greenhouse from the New York Times, labor and workplace reporter there, author of The Big Squeeze, Tough Times for the American Worker. Stephen Greenhouse, welcome back to On Point.
Nice to be here, Tom.
What's going on?
So this week there are going to be fast food strikes in seven cities at McDonald's, Taco Bell's, Wendy's, Burger King's, you name them. I think up to 20 different brand restaurants.
Okay.
And this started in November with a first series of strikes in New York City, and it's really been expanding to more cities across the country. And, you know, the folks pushing this, you know, different community groups, some labor unions, most of all the Service Employees International Union, are really trying to create in many ways, Tom, a low-wage workers movement. And they decided to begin with the fast food industry. And they really think that the typical wages in the fast food industry, $7.25, $8, $8.9, you know, the median wage, for frontline workers is $8.90 an hour in the fast food industry. They say that's just not enough to live on. And remember, as one of the people we just heard said, a lot of these jobs are part-time. So you have a lot of workers who work maybe 20 hours a week. They make, say, $8.50 an hour. That's $170 a week, $8,500 a year. And these people are saying that's just not enough. Something is fundamentally unfair. We have to change it. On the other side, the industry, many conservatives in Congress say, these workers should just be paid what the market determines, and the market says, you know, that they should get $7.25, $8, $8.50 an hour. If the market were willing to pay them more, then they'd pay them more. And if they really aren't happy with their jobs, then let them get a college degree and go elsewhere. One of the things we see is that about 40% of these low-wage workers, 40% of the workers in the United States who earn less than $10 an hour have some college or a college degree, which is pretty surprising.
Yeah.
So the big question, Tom, is, you know, after these strikes in these seven cities this week, where does the movement go from here? Can they really pressure either the McDonald's and the Burger Kings to raise wages, or can they pressure the Boston City Council, the New York City Council, the Detroit City Council to raise the minimum wage or get their states to do so?
Stephen, what's really going on here now? I mean, most of these outfits, McDonald's and others, have paid minimum wage for a long time, but we didn't see these flash strikes. Why now?
Many people in the United States Many low-wage workers in the United States, various union leaders in the United States, various progressive community activists say, there are just too many Americans who live in poverty who are just scraping by. They don't have enough to really raise their kids. They have to juggle 2-3 jobs just to get by. And, they've come together and said, we have to stand up and try to do something about these very, very low wages in the fast food industry. And they've tried to create this pressure campaign. It really is an innovative, unusual campaign. It's not at all, Tom, like your typical unionization drive where you go to one workplace and you try to get 51% of the workers to vote for a union. And that's very hard to do nowadays. They're really trying to create this kind of industry-wide push movement to demand that the fast food industry do more. And it's not just an effort to pressure the industry. I think there's a second goal to really pressure state capitals, to pressure Washington, D.C. to do more to raise the minimum wage. And I think they're saying that there's this real disconnect. We've seen the economy slowly recover from the horrendous recession of 2007, 2008, yet the minimum wage hasn't gone up in 4 years. And these workers say, we want to share in the gains. And if anything, we're moving backwards because a lot of companies are reducing part-time hours from 25-30 a week to 20-25 a week, and they feel they're going backwards, and there's huge frustration. And what's the phrase? When you got nothing to lose.
Yeah, yeah.
I think a lot of these people are earning so little, they think, why not protest? What do we lose by engaging in a one-day strike? It's not like they're going on a 4-week indefinite strike and they're going to end up starving themselves and their families. They're one-day strikes to make a lot of noise and to get the world and the news media to pay attention.
I mean, they make it all visible. It's so easy to go through the drive-through. Your stuff is delivered in a nice, crisp bag. You don't think twice about who's back there putting it together, what they make and how they live. McDonald's itself apparently understands it's challenging. They recently put out, and no doubt well-intentioned, but they put out a budget along with Visa for their workers online saying, look, here's how you can budget to get by. And even that drove people crazy. I mean, the first thing it does is assume you've got to have 2 jobs. Second, it said health insurance, that'll cost you $20 a month. Really? Where? Doesn't include childcare, didn't include groceries, didn't include clothing, didn't include gas for the worker's car. Early versions looked like they didn't even include, they put down $0 for heat. Even McDonald's budget looked kind of impossible, Stephen.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely, Tom. One of the weird things, I think McDonald's thought it was doing the right thing
by putting together
this budget to advise their employees how to scrape by each month. But it really, this budget, because in many ways it turned out to be fairly absurd, became one of the best organizing tools for this low wage movement. They say, just look at this budget. How can people really get by on this budget? And the budget assumes that a lot of these workers are making $12, $13 an hour when a lot of them are really just making $8, $9 an hour. And the budget in many ways isn't feasible. McDonald's says in response, and McDonald's and Burger King and the other companies and the National Restaurant Association say in response, we're just paying these people, what we're able to pay them. This is a competitive industry with low profit margins. So, if these workers can get jobs elsewhere that pay $15 an hour, let them do that. But, this is what – again, McDonald's and companies say this is what the market dictates. We only have to pay $8, $9 an hour. Mm. The protesters say that's just too low. That's unfair. We have to do something about it. You companies are making a lot of money and you're able to pay more. And if that means perhaps the consumers have to pay a little more for their Big Macs, so be it.
I mean, you can go in and get a pretty good handful of food for a buck at McDonald's. Maybe that's part of the issue. I don't know. But on the other hand, if people are just making this wage, they may need that low-cost food. We're back to that round-and-round Walmart argument. Stephen Greenhouse, stand by in New York. I want to bring in we're going to talk to a couple of fast food workers here today. First, in Kansas City, Terrence Wise is with us, 34 years old, father of three, works at Burger King and Pizza Hut in Kansas City, Missouri. Terrence Wise, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
Have you walked off the job, sir?
I've walked off both jobs, Tom.
Why did you do it?
Well, I figure, I hear you guys mention it earlier, what really do we have to lose here? We're slowly dying off in these jobs, and like you mentioned, I've invested 8 years with Burger King, poured a tremendous amount of energy into the company, only for them to continue to let me down as far as my family. I have 3 daughters, and like you already know, I'm currently homeless, and this movement is about making the public aware. Because like you said, they come in, you see the crisp bag that we hand the food out, and we've got to be smiley. So mm-hmm. you would think life is just peachy. But when I clock out and I leave my shops, I'm actually have no home to go to. And I don't see what could possibly be right about that.
How many hours a day are you putting in between the Burger King and Pizza Hut?
Well, just like over the years, the jobs have been in decline. They've been cutting back. Just last year, around the same time, I was doing 30, 35 hours a week at both jobs. Yep. Me and my fiance, we moved into our first home. And since over the past 6 months, we've lost our home. My hours have been cut back from 30, 35 hours a week to 15, 20 hours a week. And management was aware of the cutbacks would make me lose my home, not be able to take care of my children. But they're following budget charts or whatever, and yet they say they don't have it. But my stores are hanging up million-dollar plaques that we're making in profits every year. And they're buying all kind of things for the shop.
But Terrence, 15 or 20 hours a week, nobody can live on that. Why don't you get another job?
Well, it's, you know, we're out. My fiance, she's also working two jobs as well, and it was hard for her to get back in the field working. So,
Terrence, hold the thought. We're going to take a short break and come right back. We really want to hear your story there in Kansas City. Stephen Greenhouse in New York, please stand by. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Talking this hour about fast food workers walking off the job, saying they can't live on their wages. McDonald's, Wendy's, KFC, Taco Bell saying $7.25 an hour won't cut it. This was yesterday. Fast food workers and supporters in St. Louis saying, hey, poverty wage has got to go.
Poverty wage has got to go. Hey, hey. Oh, oh. Poverty wage has got to go.
And here in Kansas City, Missouri, are KC striking protesters. Turn it up, they say, the wages. Turn it up, turn it up. May not happen. Earlier this week, National Restaurant Association spokesman Cot DeFive said increase in minimum wage would only make it harder to hire.
There would be a severe impact on the ability to create jobs if all of a sudden the minimum wage was doubling to 15.
President says it's time for a bigger minimum wage. This was his Knox College speech last week in Galesburg, Illinois.
No one who works full-time in America should have to live in poverty. I am going to keep making the case that we need to raise the minimum wage because it's lower right now than it was when Ronald Reagan took office. It's time for the minimum wage to go up.
But it's going nowhere lately, and fast food workers are walking off the job. Terrence Wise is one of them. He joins us from Kansas City, Missouri. 34-year-old, father of three, works at Burger King and Pizza Hut in Kansas City. Been in the fast food industry for a lot of years. Right now, homeless. Cut back on hours. Couldn't afford his house. Lost the apartment, too. Living at the fiancé's sister's house. Stephen Greenhouse joins us from New York, labor and workplace correspondent for the New York Times. Terrence, we want to hear about your story, but stand by. We've got callers for you as well. Don in Columbia, South Carolina. You're on the air, Don. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Hi. Avid listener of
great,
the show.
Great.
I'm listening to it. My blood is boiling. Anyone who agrees to accept a minimum wage job and then later recants that and wants their wages renegotiated are lunatics. Those jobs are meant for supplemental income for after school, college kids, high school kids, not people raising a family. If you have taken a job such as these to raise a family on, you're doomed. You have doomed yourself to poverty. The problem is not with the job. The problem is the drive and the work ethic of America who takes these jobs and wants the money to come to them, not for them to have this job and go out and find a better job as they work.
Don, it's a tough line, but we hear it loud and clear. And let me put it right to somebody who's been on the grill in fast food for a long time now. Terrence, your story makes Don's blood boil. What do you make of Don's criticism, Terrence?
Well, hi, Don. I'm from Columbia, South Carolina as well. I was surprised to hear that. I was born and raised in Columbia, mm-hmm. and I live in Missouri now. Mm-hmm. But, Don, I came to this company 8 years ago, and my mom, when I was growing up, she was a restaurant general manager. So these jobs can be good-paying jobs, Don. They make the money. They make the profits, millions of dollars every year. And they should be able to share and distribute it and make sure their employees are taken care of. So if we continue to lift them up and make them $1 million in profit, they should take care of the ones that work for them. Now, the stigma is everybody that works here is, you know, high school students coming in. I work with adults, with families and kids, and they're raising families. So to say that these are just low-wage entry jobs and they're for high schoolers and they're unskilled, there's a lot that goes into our jobs. We operate, we deal with customers, we do a lot of work, but we're paid pennies for what we do, Don.
What about Don's point, Terrence? He says, hey, you took the job. If you don't like it, get a better one. Go out and leave it.
Well, I have people that I work with that are currently in school, and we're not even making the money to buy books and supplies to get a better education and go to school and pick up another profession. But like I said, these could be good jobs.
But still, you see what you're making, Terrence, and I mean, I understand. Who wouldn't? Your dissatisfaction with that wage. Don says, you don't like it, Terrence? Get a different job. Get a better job. What about you?
Well, me personally?
Yeah.
I what's wrong with my job? I enjoy what
I do. It doesn't pay. Pay stinks.
They can pay. They should be paying.
Yeah,
they should do their employees better.
We got the critique out of South Carolina. Stephen Greenhouse, what do you make, you know, of this? Terrence says, "Come on, my mom made a living on this. She was able to raise the family. I should too. I don't want to get a different job. They should just pay more."
So, Don in Columbia, you know, voices the sentiments of a lot of people, but I think, you know, Don forgets that we in the United States have freedom of speech. We have freedom to speak out. You know, federal law guarantees the right to push to improve your wages, to improve your working conditions. And I think Terrence and many others, they're just exercising their rights of free speech and to try to improve their lot and to pursue the American dream. Now, some people say you accept a job, you should, you know, just stay with whatever wage they offer you. But in American history, millions, tens of millions of workers have pushed, you know, over decades to try to improve their wages at their job. I should also add, I did a big story in last Sunday's paper about low-wage workers, mm-hmm. and we prepared some charts from some economic institutes. And one chart shows that of all the American workers making less than $10 an hour, which ain't much, right, Tom?
No, it's not.
40% are over the age of 35. So I think there's a misconception that these jobs, these fast food jobs, are just for teenagers. Many of them are for adults. 27% of people who earn less than $10 an hour are parents with, you know, they have to raise their kids.
I mean, there's some kind of responsibility here when you've got unemployment this high, 7 or 8 officially, take the discouraged workers and put them back in, and I don't know where you'd be, 20-30%, in suburban areas higher than that. Maybe this is the only job that people can find out there. And then you're kind of just, you're a little bit of a galley slave here without a whole lot of options if there just aren't other jobs.
One other quick point I wanted to make to Tom. So to Don is, so in my research, I found that 20 of the 25 fastest growing jobs in the United States do not require a college degree, and they'll basically be low wage jobs. So one could say, oh, leave your fast food job and get another job. Well, what are the other jobs growing quickly now? Security guards, retail clerks, cashiers, groundskeepers. And a lot of these jobs also pay, you know, poverty wages, just $9, $10, $11 an hour. And I think people forget that there's this whole layer of low-wage jobs in the economy, and, you know, fewer than half of Americans have college degrees, and they, you know, and we want them to work, and people like Terrence are dying to work hard, but they have, you know, this unfortunate position that they're only being offered jobs that really that really don't enable them to make a decent living, that force people like Don even like Terrence into homelessness.
I mean, I totally resonate with that. Up by your bootstraps, you know, get some gumption and go. But there's got to be a circumstance in which there's somewhere to go. Terrence Wise, please stand by in Kansas City. I want to go to Chicago, and Marianne Harris joins us. Marianne works at Wendy's. She's been there for 11 years, 64 years old, makes $9.23 an hour in Chicago. Not a lot. Marianne Harris, thank you very much for being with us.
You're welcome, Tom.
Marianne, describe your day for us. What do you do at Wendy's?
From 10 to about 3:30, I cook the hamburgers. From 3:30 to 5, I go downstairs. We have a downstairs dining room.
Uh-huh.
And I have to clean that.
Okay, so first you cook, then you clean. How do you get by on $9.23 an hour?
It's not easy. Up until 6 years ago, I was doing okay. But now, it's changed. You telling me I was getting a little better wages. I was making more than the minimum wage. Now you tell me all you can give me is a nickel every 6 months. That's not helping very much. I applied for medical. They said no because I made enough. I think that's crazy.
You got a raise a year ago, I'm reading here. 15
yes,
cents an hour. 15 cents an hour was your raise.
Yes.
That's not a lot. What about the way, the environment there, the way you're treated by your managers?
It's like they don't care. Some of them do, some of them don't.
Did you expect to be working at Wendy's when you're 64 years old, Marianne, Ms. Harris?
No.
How long do you think you're going to do it or have to do it?
Well, I'm getting old. I'm getting a little slower, so I guess I'm going to have to leave, I guess, by next year.
Boy.
With no money, I can't stay there.
Making the hamburgers. Let's go back to South Carolina. Steve in Myrtle Beach. Steve, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'd just like to say that this is nothing more than greed, but I'm a fair-minded guy. So the next time the National Restaurant Association or McDonald's Corporation, these franchise owners, talk about how, you know, this is all we can do, fine. Open up your books and let's see how much you get paid every year. There are people making $400,000 a year off these operations. And their refusal to pay their employees more is nothing more than greed. And as for the idea about going to get another job, during the boom, 2000 to 2006, they weren't being paid any more then.
Might have been easier to get another job then. Tougher right now. Stephen Greenhouse, what about, take any of these companies. Take McDonald's, the CEO there, what they make or the return overall. Is it obvious from their financial profile that they can't do better? This is it, folks.
Tom, that's a point that's heavily argued. If memory serves, McDonald's, I think, has about $1.5 billion profits a year. And McDonald's says that for a company as large, as gigantic as it is, that's not so much money.
Mm-hmm.
To a lot of these protesters, they say, $1.5 billion, wow, they could easily pay us more. And remember, there are a lot of franchisees that run 6, 8, 10, 12 restaurants in various cities and various counties. And some of these franchisees are doing very, very well and can probably pay a good bit more. And I imagine that some franchisees aren't doing great. And I think one of the big goals of these fast food strikes is to pressure the franchisees to really cough up more money and to embarrass the McDonald's, the Burger Kings, the Taco Bells, to pressure, to pressure their franchisees to pay more money.
Terrence Wise, I saw somebody calculate that I think it was a Big Mac, something like that. If they doubled everybody's wages at, I think it was McDonald's, it would add like 60 or 70 cents to the cost of one of their big sandwiches from, I forget what it was, 350.
68 cents from 399 to 467, Tom.
Okay. So, Terrence, what about that? Maybe this goes to consumers. Maybe we want, too much food, too cheap. What if people paid a little more? Could they? Would they, Terrence? And then you could double your wage?
Well, Tom, I've had feedback from customers and people in the community, and they some get it that it's morally unethical that we live the way they do. And they say, for my neighbor, my brother Terrence, they're talking about me, I'd pay an extra 60 cents to see his family not homeless. I'd pay an extra 60 cents to see Miss Harrison in Chicago, who can't afford medical, do better. So it's about your neighbor. Tom, would you pay an extra 60 cent to keep a family off the street and to make sure that everyone in this these United States live well.
I mean, when you put it that way, the answer sounds easy. On the other hand, I know a lot of people, they enjoy when they go into McDonald's or others to see that very low-cost menu up there. But, you know, I mean, I do, when I think about how little people behind that counter are making, sometimes I do feel bad about it. It's like, and where else can they go to work? I feel a little guilty, yes, because that's low wages, and it's hard to live on. And here I am waltzing out with my, you know, sandwich for a buck. Yeah, I feel a little guilty sometimes, Terrence.
And the higher pay helps us and the whole economy.
But still, what about, you know, it's proven out to you that it's not paying. Why not leave this fast food business and go somewhere else and find a better job? That's the market economy, isn't it?
Yeah, and you kind of mentioned it earlier. Go where?
Well, there must be something going on in Kansas City that pays better than that. I don't know.
Well, I've been around, Tom.
Yeah.
I've been around the block a few times.
Yeah, I bet you have, and not seeing it. Victoria in Omaha, Nebraska. Victoria, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
What I'm called to talk about was, you know, this whole notion that folks should get a second job on top of the first. A lot of these quick service restaurants expect people to have absolute open availability while only scheduling about 25 hours a week. I have a college education, and because of the economy, I've had to settle for working in restaurants. And I tell you what, it's been impossible to get a schedule that will allow me to go get my master's or any continuing education, or even allow for me to have any money to get furthering it, you know, further education. You know, I'm about the same age as Terrence down in Kansas City, and the other thing that I'm finding is you keep saying, well, why don't you just go get another job somewhere else? You almost get pigeonholed. I graduated 2004 from Creighton University, and it's been impossible to find other jobs because people don't think that I have the professional qualifications or the ability to do anything besides work outside of a restaurant now.
So, I mean, what's the answer? Are you trying to get by on your service restaurant work? How's that working?
It's pretty tough. Both my partner and I have college degrees, and we just keep working hard at it, you know, taking what we can get. Unfortunately, I visit food pantries. This Saturday is the first Saturday of the month, and I'll be going and getting assistance to make sure that we have food in the house.
Yeah. Victoria, I appreciate your call. Marianne Harrison, Chicago. Do you feel sometimes, I mean, a lot of people must know that you don't make a lot. Do you feel sympathy from the folks who come into your Wendy's restaurant, you know, to your low wage? Marianne?
I doubt it.
You think they even think about it?
I don't think so. Because they're looking for a bargain.
They're looking for a bargain.
That means the restaurants are always crowded. They making money. They have enough to give us a few extra quarters. I'm not going to say pennies, nickels, or dimes, because that's not going to work for me.
Mm-hmm. But a couple.
They have the money.
A couple more quarters, please. Marianne Harris is saying out of Chicago, and a bunch of other fast food workers around the country saying from all over. Marianne Harris, I appreciate you spending a few minutes with us today. Thank you very much for coming on, Marianne.
Okay, thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about fast food workers walking off the job, saying they can't live on their wages. McDonald's, Wendy's, KFC, Taco Bell saying $7.25 an hour won't cut it, is the message from the street. And we've seen it in a bunch of cities now. Interesting. First time I can remember seeing this kind of thing just in the last few months. Terrence Wise is with us, 34-year-old father of three, works for Burger King and Pizza Hut in Kansas City, Missouri. He's walked off the job a couple of times here trying to make some noise about this. Stephen Greenhouse is with us, labor and workplace reporter for the New York Times, author of The Big Squeeze, Tough Times for the American Worker. And with us right now from Washington is Diana Firstgott-Roth, senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. She was a chief economist at the U.S. Labor Department in the George W. Bush years, served as chief of staff to President George W. Bush's Council of Economic Advisors. Diana, welcome back to On Point.
Great to be with you.
We're seeing something pretty unusual here, and we're seeing it in a bunch of cities now. Fast food workers saying, we just can't take it, and we can't make it on this wage. What do you say to this movement, Diana? Do they have a point?
Well, I think that it's not just accidental that this is happening right now. It's being organized by the Restaurant Opportunities Center United, and they are organizing these demonstrations.
Yeah, duly noted. We've seen that. And I mean, why not? But still, it's people putting their feet on the ground outside the restaurant rather than in.
Right, yes, no, that's true. And I have the utmost sympathy for Terrence, but I would still say that raising the minimum wage would undercut entry-level workers who want a part-time job. 58% of minimum wage workers work part-time. About half are under 25. And the main problem we have here, there's two main problems. First of all, that fast food workers' hours are getting cut because of the new health care law, which is going to take effect 2014, that if people are employed more than 30 hours or more, and the employer doesn't have the right kind of health insurance, the employer pays a penalty of $2,000 per worker per year. So all over the country, hours are being cut so they are under 30 hours. Just as Terrence described, his hours got cut, and that posed a great problem from him. But I think the bigger issue here we have is social mobility. We need to figure out some way that Terrence can either go back to school and get a better set of skills, or why is he not able to move up to a different kind of job? That's what we need to address.
Absolutely.
We need these minimum wage jobs for people who don't have any skills, but we also need to be focusing on community college education in high-return professions, such as nursing, occupational therapy, computer programming, so that people can get a head up, a step up to the next job.
Diana, let me ask you about a couple of things there. Well, on health care, first of all, I mean, there may be cutbacks to part-time because of the reforms coming in health care. On the other hand, look at the health care people have in a lot of these jobs. It's pretty lousy, and maybe none at all. So, I mean, at least there's something being tried there to get them health care. And I can't help noticing as well, I wanted to ask you, Diana, lots of these employees, as we've seen in the past with Walmart employees, they get these low wages, but then they're also, to get by, they're on food stamps. They're on Medicare. Is that, in effect, these big, big companies, these corporations, leaning on federal subsidies to help make it possible for them to pay these low wages?
Well, I think that, first of all, we have to notice that 3.8 million workers out of 135 million are being paid minimum wage. That's about 2.8% of non-farm payroll workers. This is not a systematic problem. Only a small fraction of workers in the U.S. economy are being paid minimum wage. And I think it's good that we have the supports, such as earned income tax credit, food stamps, housing vouchers, Medicaid, because if employers are forced to raise their wages, then there will not be that first rung on the career ladder for many low-skill workers. My teen has a minimum wage job this summer. I can assure you no one would hire him if they had to pay him $10 an hour. So I think it's more efficient to have the federal government stepping in and offering people who are at the poverty level or in need these different programs. Because if McDonald's or these other places had to pay more, a lot of people just wouldn't get their first job. And as I said, it's a matter of social mobility. If you don't get that first job, you cannot move on to the second job. I started off in fast food, being paid $3.25 an hour working at Baskin Robbins, and I'm very glad I was able to get that job at that time.
I'm also glad that I'm not
at Baskin Robbins anymore.
I understand that. We've seen so much reporting on diminished social mobility in this country that it leaves me wondering if we've built a kind of a trap here. You described the way the system's supposed to work, and that's great, but what if the jobs aren't there? What if the social mobility's not there? We've seen again and again that it's down.
It's a very big problem, and we got very low GDP numbers for the second quarter, and we can see that the economy needs to be growing faster to provide more jobs for Terrence and for Marianne, and we need to be looking at some of the regulations that the government's putting on. Why, for example, is the Environmental Protection Agency talking about doing a big cap and trade carbon tax that the Democratic Congress rejected in 2009 and 2010. That makes our economy less competitive. Fewer manufacturers are going to come here and offer jobs.
I mean, maybe so their grandkids don't choke to death.
I'm choking to death right now. And why do we have the highest corporate tax rate in the industrialized world?
President Obama is saying let's cut that and do some other things to make things.
We should cut it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Stephen Greenhouse, what about this argument? Raise the wage, like as Terrence and others ask, and you're going to take away the first rungs of the ladder, and then there's just no way to get into the economy.
You know, as Diana knows, there's a very lively debate, controversy among professional economists about raising the minimum wage modestly reduces the number of jobs. And you know, the leading study by Alan Krueger and David Card, the most respected study, generally says that a minor increase in the minimum wage does not decrease the number of jobs. There are other studies that find contrary. But, you know, the jury is still out about, you know, whether a modest raise in minimum wage will reduce jobs. I think many people will agree that if you were to raise the minimum wage to $20 from $7.25, of course, that's going to reduce the number of jobs. And many employers might replace workers with robots or with computers. You know, I agree with Diana that, you know, for individuals like Terrence, it would be great if they can go back to college and improve their skills and get high-wage jobs. But a lot of these people are trapped. They're making $8 an hour, $9 an hour. They have kids to support, and they're just not in a life position to go back to school. And, you know, colleges aren't throwing scholarships at them. Government isn't really making aid available to them. So they're kind of caught in low-wage jobs. And remember, Diana, even if, you know, people like Terrence, you know, had the good fortune of being able to return to school and improve their skills, remember that, you know, 20 of the 25 fastest growing jobs in the United States, nursing home aide, home health aide, security guard, a lot of these jobs do not require college education. So on one hand, we could say individually go improve your education to raise your wages, but there's still going to be millions, tens of millions of jobs that do not require college education. We have to ask the people who hold those jobs perhaps for a decade or two, is it fair for them to make so little? And you said, Diana, that you know, just 3.5 million people work at the minimum wage level. I've seen statistics showing that 28 million Americans earn $9.89 an hour or less. And I think a lot of the people on strike are saying, whether it's the minimum wage or $8.50 an hour or $9.89 an hour, it still isn't enough to support a family.
Terrence Wise, you're the man in the middle here. I want to come back to you again on this issue of you don't like this job, get out of it. You've been in it for a while now. What are you thinking when Diana says, look, move on. This is the first rung on the ladder. Move on, sir.
Well, I tell you, I make $9.30 an hour at Burger King.
Okay.
And I make $7.47 an hour at Pizza Hut. Now, me and my fiance, we mapped out the going back to school and bettering our education.
Mm-hmm.
And she went first. She went to Job Corps, got a CNA, Certified Nursing Assistant license.
Yep.
And she's making $9 an hour where she works.
Okay. That's exactly Stephen's point.
Yes. Yeah, so and that was the plan. She went back first, and we have three daughters we're raising. And
right.
Then I'm supposed to go back and further my education, you know,
yep.
And do whatever I want to do. But we're struggling on the wages we got to even, we can't even pay a mortgage, let alone try to get back into school and better our education. And our jobs could pay better. And lifting up the low-wage workers not only lifts us up, but it'll lift up every worker in America. So everyone's living conditions will improve and pay should improve. But we'll start at the bottom.
Make a market. Debbie in Greenfield, Massachusetts. You're on the air, Debbie. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I think that it is simplistic and shameful to suggest that Mr. Wise just move on to another job. And there is a moral component to what we're talking about on your show that has really not been fully addressed. And I'd like to see this whole discussion take place within a moral framework. And to that point, Diana said that hours were being cut because of the health care law. I take exception with that. The hours are being cut because people do not want to comply with the health care law, and that they'd rather not do the right thing. that would rather not do the right moral thing? Is it moral for the lowest paid worker to make 300 times less than the highest paid worker? When in societies that function well, that ratio is 1 to 30. And I think it's morally wrong for McDonald's to not add 64 cents to the price of a hamburger so that decent, hardworking people can earn a good living.
Debbie, I'm really glad for your call. I mean, the conversation itself suggests a kind of a moral consideration. Here we are, Diana.
I absolutely agree. I first want to note that companies will be complying with the healthcare law if they employ workers for fewer than 30 hours a week and they do not pay the penalty.
But you take her point. It's obvious what she's saying.
The law is very, very misconceived because it is resulting in situations like Terrence's where his hours get cut.
Bring in the moral component, and Debbie component, says, come on,
exactly.
Folks, don't lay them off. Comply with the law and help them have health care.
Yeah, well, I think it's immoral not to allow people with skills less than $8 an hour, and $8 an hour is $7.25 an hour plus workers' comp, unemployment insurance, Social Security. That's what it costs the employer. So if we set the wage at $8 an hour, we're saying that those with skills under $8 an hour are not allowed to work. That is immoral. If we raise the minimum wage to $10 an hour, we're saying people with skills under that amount are not allowed to work. And it's immoral that we don't give young people a chance to enter the workforce on that first rung of the career ladder. We see countries such as Spain with 50% youth unemployment, with vast social problems. We are heading for vast social problems if we cut out entry-level jobs.
I mean,
I
take your point.
Also, a matter of morality.
Yeah, and you want growth, and certainly growth really helps. I mean, the last time we really saw wages going up in the late '90s, the end of Bill Clinton's term there, when we had very low unemployment, and that was terrific. Stephen Greenhouse, you've covered this for a long time. How do you bring the moral component in here? I mean, people can feel, you know, really queasy looking out at fellow citizens like Terrence. Terrence is homeless with three daughters. And you know, you can say, go get another job, get an education. But we also know that is not easy at all. It's the way the economy is supposed to work. But do we just overlook the pain of those, you know, flipping the burgers behind the counter?
Tom, what you say makes me think of, you know, various Roman Catholic encyclicals, you know, about the importance of helping the poor and trying to take the sharpest edges off the market. And people who support, you know, free markets say, you know, whatever the market does is right. If it dictates wages of $7.25 an hour, so be it. If people want to make more than that, then let them go back to college. You know, the Roman Catholic Church, many others say, it's not right for anyone to work and be so poor that they can't support the families. And they say something has to be done to soften the market. And those are the people who say the minimum wage is too low, just $7.25 an hour. We need to increase it so that people aren't struggling so much, that people like Terrence with three kids and two jobs, you know, don't have to live without a home, homeless. I want to just respond to one quick thing that Diana said. She said that, the main reason more jobs aren't being created, that the economy is growing slowly, and one could argue whether 1.7% GDP growth is slow, is that, you know,
slow.
President Obama wants to throw in all these regulations. You know, many – and Diana, as you know, in many, many interviews with businessmen, they say the main reason they're not expanding and hiring more people is there isn't enough consumer demand. And I think Terrence made a very profound point that if you pay workers like him more, that will increase their spending power, increase consumer demand, and that might cause a lot of businesses, you know, to have higher sales and then hire more people, and that will have a virtuous cycle to increase economic growth and reduce poverty.
I want to give the last word to Terrence, because Terrence, you're the guy who's dealing with this with a family, a couple of jobs in this industry. What are you hoping for, Terrence? What do you think you might get here?
Well, I'm hoping that this movement, that the public is aware that the people that are serving them, that they, when they get off of work, go into these shops and buy, the people behind these counters are struggling. And this is a cry for help. We're not getting into this field and then accepting this and then saying, well, we want more. We need help. And if these companies were making billions and millions for these companies, they should take care of the of their workers. And I also want workers to know it's okay to stand up and demand better from your company that you work for. And don't be afraid, because if we continue to live like this, we're losing houses, we're dying slowly. So we need help.
Are you afraid you might show up at Burger King or Pizza Hut after, you know, being out there, being on the air, and your job will be gone, Terrence?
Well, my life is slowly deteriorating, so it's like what you kind of pointed to earlier. What else do we have to lose? We either stay and stay silent and continue to suffer, or we speak out. We ask for change.
Terrence Wise, 34-year-old father of three in Kansas City, Missouri, works at Burger King, works at Pizza Hut, homeless. Terrence, good luck to you. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom.
Diana Ferscott-Roth at the Manhattan Institute, joining us today from Washington. Diana, thank you for your insights today.
Great to be with you.
And Stephen Greenhouse, labor and workplace correspondent for the New York Times, author of The Big Squeeze. Stephen, it's always good to have you. Thanks for joining us.
Always good to be here, Tom. Thanks.
Tomorrow, we've got today the head of the NSA talking at a hackers conference. Black Hat, that NSA stuff is hot. We'll look at it. Join us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.